Welcome back to another video cast. I'm Bob Furring, and my guests today are two special people. They are docents at the Coachella Valley History Museum, Bill and Kathy Claiborne. Welcome to our Sun City Shadow Hills.
We're glad to be here.
We're happy to have you. And the Coachella Valley History Museum is nice and close. It's a unique facility. And so would you start off by telling us the history and how it got started?
The history of the museum is starting in, it was 1926. Dr. Smiley was one of our first medical doctors here. He was traveling through, well, actually he broke down on the highway, and they brought his car into Indio to be fixed. And so he found out that there wasn't a medical doctor here in Indio, and so he and his wife were headed to San Diego, and they decided to stay. And a couple of years later, they built the 1926 Smiley House, which is what we call it. And it's an adobe house. It's over 3,000 square feet. It also has an 1,100 square foot basement. Dr. Smiley lived there until 1948 when he retired, and he sold the house to Dr. Tyler. Dr. Tyler was a dentist. He lived there with his wife and three kids until 1980, and then that's when the city of Indio, fortunately, bought the building, and the people that started the docents there started the museum about 1984, and I started taking my kids there in 1984, and all that was there was the Smiley House, and since then we have added a blacksmith shop, a 1909 schoolhouse, and one of the few date museums in the world.
So going back 100 years ago, this was primarily a railroad town with a little bit of dates, is that right?
Yeah, around 1900 is when the date industry began. The railroad came through here in 1876, so there was very little people here from 1876 on to that 1900. There were a few people here, but the date industry is, the railroad and the date industry is really what brought our valley into population, to the population that we have. We had in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Bill and Kathy have brought a video or a slideshow. And so at this point, we're going to cut out and let Kathy make the presentation.
We've been doing school tours with children's for many years. We've been doing them for 15 years. We have an average of between 1,800 and 2,200 third graders come through our museum every year. This is going to show you what is at our museum and what, if you choose to come or come and volunteer with us, or just bring your children or grandchildren, you'll be seeing our museum. This is the entryway. It's in Indio on Miles Avenue. This is a Spanish-style bell that's on the front of the house, Dr. Smiley's original bell that was put up. It's the original home that you walk into. This is a school bus of children coming. You can see they're excited. They're very excited. They learn a lot that day. It's one of the most popular school trip tours in the valley. Teachers are already signing up for next year. Here we see a docent starting the tour down the sidewalk to the what's now a museum with the water tower behind it, the Coachella Valley History Museum. This is us going in with a group. To the right is the office, which was Dr. Tyler's, the dentist. It was Dr. Smiley's garage. We're going to walk up the stairs into the what was the reception office for Dr. Smiley. This is the center fountain area, which was Dr. Tyler's wife's kind of refuge in the evening, where the women of India would come in the early 1900s to just sit and relax in the evening when it was very hot. Gift shop, some of our docents and volunteers, all retired teachers pretty much. Here we're in the Kauia room. The Kauians were here before anyone else in the valley. We have evidence that they were on the valley floor up to 10,000 years ago. As you're looking here, you see a tour and you see the artifacts that we have. Children from the school learning about how the Kauians were able to live in a very hostile environment. You need to come and actually touch the stuff, see the rabbit sticks, see the hunting sticks, see the foods, see how they survived in this area. This is a rabbit stick. The children get very involved with this. If you are a retired teacher just interested in children, we certainly could use people to help us with the tours. Okay, this is one of our docents, again, doing hands-on activity with the kids in the Kauia room. The Kauians were quite lucky as far as Native Americans were because of our desert environment. Nobody really wanted to be here. So they were able to keep their lifestyle and keep kind of their culture intact much later into the 1800s than most other Native American groups. Again, no one wanted to be here, so they didn't come. It changed. This is an incredible basket collection that we have on permanent loan from one of our Valley residents, the Orthomore family, and that's part of our display. Before I go into this film, I want to talk a little bit more about the Kauians. They were here for many, many years. What changed for them? The first people to come through were the Padres. They came through because there were missions on the east, on the coast of California and in Arizona, and they would walk through here. They thought there was no water, so they did not stop. The next people to come through were in the early 1800s. They were the miners and the map makers, so the Kauians were introduced to some other peoples. The next big change happened because of the Civil War. The Southern Pacific Railroad was being built, and it got to Yuma, Arizona before the war. President Lincoln stopped the building of that railroad because he knew that if they finished it or even had it partially finished, that if the war was going to happen, which he knew it would, the South would have a railroad to use, and if they lost the war, they would have given them a railroad. So they stopped the building of the railroad. After the war, the railroad needed to be finished. Indio had something the railroad needed. They had water. It wasn't Indio yet. It had no name as such. They had water. So the Southern Pacific Railroad made Indio, right down on Indio Boulevard, where the Greyhound Station is now the center of the building of the railroad. Men came from the East Coast to build it because after the Civil War, there was a recession on the East Coast. Men needed jobs. They left their wives, their 12 kids, and they came out on horseback, lived here 6, 7, 8 years, saving their money and helping to build the railroad. When they went home, the recession was still going on the East Coast, so they still couldn't get land and take care of their families. They had money. They loaded up their families on flatbed train cars, brought them back to Indio area because they'd seen the Kauians farming. The Kauians were very friendly people. They actually taught them how to get the water and how to farm. So they came back to the Coachella Valley. And this particular slide shows our agriculture room, which shows the products that they were able to grow in the late 1800s to start growing through irrigation. They came out with their families. They lived in tents for the first couple of years because they had to get their crops into the ground in large tents. Then they built small houses, and our valley blossomed from then. It grew very, very quickly. This is, again, part of the agriculture room showing the way it was. Okay. I don't know if we can see the water bill. You want to talk about the water for a minute? Part of the reason they were able to do so well is the water we get from the Colorado River. Bill?
If you're not familiar with our water system here, all of our drinking water in the valley comes from a deep aquifer. The Coachella Valley Water District is in charge of maintaining that aquifer so that we will have water for a very long time if you're concerned about water here and the number of people that are here. The other thing that happened in late 40s, actually around the 1940s, the completion of the Coachella Valley branch of the All-America Canal was finished. It's a canal from the Yuma, Arizona. There's a diversion dam in Yuma, Arizona. It diverts water to Arizona, Mexico. The rest of that water is put into these large percolation ponds where they take out as much of the sediment as possible. Then they put it in the All-American Canal, which comes to our Coachella Valley. In the beginning, that water was only to be used for agriculture. But because of our population increase, what the water district decided to do was to use some of that water to percolate back into the ground to replenish our aquifer. One of the main sources of our replenishing comes from the Metropolitan Water Company, which comes from Parker, Arizona, across the desert. If you're going down Interstate 10 on the left-hand side of the road, you see these big pipes coming up over the mountain with a big pumping station at the bottom. That's Metropolitan. There's a huge pipe underground that comes from there to the top of our valley, which is the Whitewater Canyon. In that Whitewater Canyon, there is a concrete cistern that they open up, and they let water run down what's a natural whitewater river. If you've seen water coming under the Whitewater Bridge, that's not snow melt. That's water from the Metropolitan Water Company. And that water flows down into the west end of Palm Springs, where it goes into these huge ponds, and it percolates into the ground about 2 feet per day. The problem is that in the upper part of our valley, we have blow sand. Water percolates very well through the blow sand, but if you come down towards the eastern end of our valley, it's clay, and water doesn't percolate very well through clay, so the water district built some percolation ponds up on the alluvial fans so that the water would percolate. Then the Metropolitan, though, there is a large, they tunneled through that mountain, and that water ends up furnishing water for L.A. County. What we do is we are part of the Feather River Project, which we trade water back and forth. So the Metropolitan gives us water when they have enough, and we are supposed to get water from the Feather River, so we trade it. So that's how we replenish the aquifer.
Okay, thank you. Going on from here, this is some railroad paraphernalia that we have. We have a fire alarm system on the right. We have a fire hat. We have some old fire extinguishers that actually were filled with a chemical that right now I'm totally blanking the name of. I'm sorry, but it is, they're actually illegal now. They had a chemical in that is the same thing that used to be in fire extinguishers that is very harmful to your lungs. This is a Of course, we know what it is at our age, but children have never seen this before. I have to bring up the movie Back to the Future to get them to know what it means. It's a railroad crossing warning and some more equipment that the railroad used. This is our kitchen, one of the probably favorite rooms of the adults because a lot of us have grandparents or great-grandparents that had a room like this. This is a stove. It's a gas electric, very modern. On one side is gas. On the other is electric. We have different artifacts on it. If you're thinking about it for a minute, look at the up on the top left, not the scale, the thing next to it. Do you know what that is? Take a second. On the stove, on the burner, on the top front right burner, there is another one. One's electric, it's on top, one uses the stove. What are those? They're toasters. You probably remember that, maybe not. Okay, looking at the irons, women had a very tough job at that time. They had to wash the clothes in a big a metal tub and then actually pump the water, heat the water, put the soap in, wring them out, pump more water, heat the water, rinse it, hang it up. There was no rinse cycle on that, so they had to do all very heavy work. And then the next day they ironed everything. So we do have the things that women used. Of course, many of us know that because we're old enough. That's a food grinder. Some people still use it. The old types of spice containers that if you have, get rid of. They're all out of date unless you have the newer ones. There's a toaster with a toast on each side, okay? This is a dumb waiter that's actually in the kitchen, quite fascinating. Downstairs, as Bill told you, there was a basement. The basement downstairs had a bedroom, a storage room, and a dining room. They ate downstairs and slept downstairs in the summer because it was cooler. The dumb waiter had dumb does not mean stupid, it means it can't talk. It had a rope pulley system that lowered the food down. Then they had a maid, Dr. Spidey and his wife, no children. They lowered the food down, brought up the dirty dishes, but you couldn't ask it for more milk. Couldn't talk. This is Bill again going out to the blacksmith shop, so go ahead and talk about that.
One of our areas is outside. What you see behind me, we have three or four different kinds of washing machines. If you see that triad behind us, that is a refrigerator, one of our first refrigerators, and you'll have to come down and see it. If you look over to the far, I guess it would be the far right, you can see we have a real adobe building.
That's left.
Because the Smiley House is stuccoed and plastered, we wanted to let people know what an actual adobe actually looked like. detail. That's the refrigerator. Keep going. And that's one of some of our washing machines.
That one's called a speedy wash because it went up and down, and the faster the woman put it up and down, the faster the clothes got washed. Okay, it was like a rubber. Looks like a plunger, but it actually washed the clothes.
Yeah, that's another washing machine. That's a hand agitator. You put up that top and you crank that handle, and that's your agitator on the inside.
Quite modern for the day.
These are foursome tractors. We actually have a couple of 1920-something foursome tractors. Those are the only two tractors that we have. The rest of all the farming equipment that we have was either pulled by horses or mules.
And I read that the foursome tractors is what actually changed the Midwest and the country, because up until the tractors, farmers were only able to plant and use crops for their families, not to sell them. Once the foursomes, they had to plant them for their family and their horses and their cows. Once the foursome came into being, they were able to actually put their cows out to pasture, let them, they weren't actually growing the crops just for the cows and the horses. They could plant crops and use the tractors to harvest and sell their crops. Farming changed.
This is, again, some of the farming equipment. Most of that, we do have a push plow there, but the rest of those plows were pulled by either horses or mules. This is the push plow. This is actually I marvel at this machine right here, because this actually is a two-row corn planter. It can actually plant two rows of corn at the same time. It would be pulled by two horses or two mules. It's a wonderful machine.
It actually cut into the ground, dropped the seeds in, and covered them in one step, in two steps. There you go, back to the adobe.
Yeah, this is that adobe building I was talking about that they built, just so that you could actually see. These are called 14-inch adobe bricks. They weigh about 60 pounds apiece. And, of course, because our walls in the Smiley House are 14 inches thick, that means it's cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter.
Okay.
And this is the blacksmith shop. Again, these buildings were not here when the families lived here. This blacksmith shop was built because it is the museum's job to have a place to store and show all of these artifacts these wonderful artifacts. It's amazing the amount of tools that were invented to do certain jobs, and we are very lucky to have a lot of them. So if you ever lived on a farm or something, I'm sure you would recognize a lot of these things.
And this blacksmith shop was just renovated and changed. We had a blacksmith come in and redo it to make it more at to the time and the way it would have been. So if you've been there before and seen the old blacksmith shop, come back and see the way it was redone. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah, this is the old one. There's a forge that he's working in front of. We have two forges, but what they wanted to do was to be a little more like what a blacksmith would be doing, and so many of the items that we have on display now are actually either used by the blacksmith or actually made by the blacksmith. So it's a very, very good display of the old way of blacksmithing, plus several anvils. And the kids love this because I let them sit on it, but it's to sharpen your tools. This is another forge. And, of course, the anvil.
Okay, this is called a submarine. The submarine was used by the railroad workers. Sub means under, marine means water. It's actually what they slept in, and it was designed by a fireman on the railroad. He didn't have any degree. He just designed this. It was made out of metal, the sides. The sides of the building were covered by burlap. There's a pipe that goes up. You can kind of see it at the top of the the submarine right above the door. The pipe went up the top and across the top. It pumped water up to a big pipe going across the top with holes in it. The water would go out and saturate the burlap. When the sun or the wind hit that burlap, it evaporated and it created a large evaporative cooler. So one to two guys could sleep in these and be cool, and they were able to finish the railroad on time. They were actually getting sick because of our horrendous heat here in the summer, so that was invented out of necessity. They were used by the railroad till the railroad was finished. They gave them to the hospitals, and many people around the valley actually had them in their backyard for summer to sleep in if they needed them. So they were used quite long into our history. This is the inside showing a bed. This particular one has plugs in it. They did eventually put electricity into them. This is our Japanese garden, another part of our history. Our Japanese Americans played an important part in our history here in the valley. We have quite an active group of Japanese Americans at the museum. They put in the garden to give honor to the farmers who came here to do the small crops down in the East Valley.
Yeah, the water tower has an interesting story, too. The water tower was actually located on Avenue 48 in Jackson Street. It was the old Whittier Date Ranch. Some of the relatives of that of Wheeler moved it to the museum, and it used to sit on top of the submarine. It's supposed to be a landmark. Well, the trees grew so that nobody could see it. So they decided we're going to move it. And so when they were going to move it, they found out that the wood underneath and the wood inside the tin roof was needed to be replaced. And so they took a crane. They set the water tower off on a lot behind there. They completely redid all of the wood inside and out. Then they moved the frame over to the middle of Deglet North Street, which is the street that's right next to the museum, put the framing back, put the tower back. But the most interesting thing about our water tower now is that we have three cameras at different locations, and at night they project pictures up on the water tower. And my favorite thing that happens is that the water tower fills up with water and you can see fish swimming around it. And I'm not sure about the timing and when it's supposed to be at night. So it's a very interesting thing to bring people to see.
While we're looking at that, the museum is no longer just a schoolhouse. We're a campus, and we took over Deglet North Street. It's now grass. That's what it sits on. We have many festivals there, so pay attention to those. They're a lot of fun. We have the Day of the Dead Festival coming up in the fall. We have a spring one. During nice parts of the season, they're a lot of fun. There's dinners. There's all sorts of neat things you can come to. You can also, of course, rent the museum, have events there. It's a wonderful place to take families or do events. We have, see if this is going to come up. Nope. Oh, there it is. Okay, the date grounds are next to our schoolhouse across the street. They're part of our campus. Right now they're quite large. They were dedicated by the Keck family, or donated. We have a date garden that has to have 48 trees. One male, 47? One, well, correct me.
Well, there's actually 24 Deglet Nor palms that you're looking at that you can see right there, and I always tell the people you can see the sign there and you see the tree by the sign. Well, that's the tree. They want to know, how do you identify a male tree? And I say, well, that's the one that has the smile on his face, because as Kathy was saying, you need one male tree that makes enough pollen for 48 females.
Now, I always say it has a frown because they're telling them what to do, but it's up to your choice there. Okay, so this is our date garden. It's a working date garden. It's by the schoolhouse, which is right here. This is our 1909 schoolhouse. It originally was on the corner of Oasis and Bliss, kind of near where the current COD campus is. It was moved to behind the original Desert Sands Unified School District building, actually Roosevelt School, on Highway 111. When I first started teaching, it was actually there. It was behind it. It was used for a while as an overflow school classroom. It was used as some office buildings, and eventually they cut right in the side there. They cut garage doors in, and they took vehicles up into it and serviced it. They were going to tear it down in the 1990s or late 80s, or somewhere in the late 1900s, and instead they agreed 99. To give it to the museum, and we've got it now as the original schoolhouse. It was in extremely good condition. It was built very well by the railroad. It looks like a depot to me. And you can see the bell on top. If you come, you can read that bell. Okay, it was relocated in 1999. Good, okay, to the Coachella Valley History Museum. It has a pump. You can pump water. You can do it to your heart's content if you wish. This is one of our docents showing the kids a non-working outhouse, but the kids have no idea what this stuff is. And they get to ring the bell. Inside, we have a full two-room, one-room schoolhouse. We call it one room, but it's two rooms. And we have another docent giving a lesson to the children with the chalkboards. It's quite an experience. If you bring your grandchildren or your children, whoever, they can sit in the desk, they can write on the chalkboards, they can ring the bell. It's a great experience. The flag on the wall behind is an incorrect flag. It had actually too many stars. No, not enough stars. Oklahoma had been being made a state. But, of course, they didn't have the money to buy one, so they used the flag that was available. Another docent with the children. Okay. And so that's showing that it's wrong. There's one.
4,500.
It should have been 46. And, okay, penmanship. Doing the lazy eights. Some of you might remember doing that with a pencil and paper. Doing the alphabet. And then they just complete the tour and get a reminder. I thought I'd taken this off. The change in this, we are no longer 10 for adults. We're 8 for adults and 6 for seniors. Children are free. Our hours now, our summer hours, are just Friday and Saturday from 11 to 1. During the regular year, we're open Monday through Saturday from 10 to 4, and on Sunday from 1 to 4. So we would like you to come down and join us, come down and help us, come down and just visit our museum, come down and see us. I think you'll learn more than you ever thought you'd learn about our valley. Okay?
Something I'd like to say about the volunteers, it's pretty overwhelming when you first get there, when you listen to all the information, but Kathy and I have been there 15 years, and we have learned from the docents that were there before us, and that's what you would be doing if you decided to be a docent. We also have a cashier that we need for shifts. There are 3-hour shifts. We also have an archives there if you're interested in working in an archives. So we have many other volunteer jobs besides just being a docent or in the cafeteria. And so any help that the museum will receive, because everyone there are all volunteers. We have one paid person, which is the secretary, and the rest of the people are volunteers. And the best thing about it is that you learn something new every day, and you learn about the history of Indio and our Coachella Valley, because we do try to learn as much as we can about the entire Coachella Valley.
Bill and Kathy, thank you very much for a most comprehensive presentation. I really don't have any questions, but you do have a website, right?
Yes, we do. If you go online at Coachella Valley History Museum, you'll find our website. It will tell you our hours. It will tell you the activities that are coming up, events. There's a summer program for kids, by the way. It's a very good one, an art program for 4 weeks. That's on there. You will also find out how to become a volunteer. We're not pushing it, but we sure do need some. We'd love to have you come and visit and just see what we do. Come and enjoy it, too. Just come enjoy our history. Bring your friends.
Okay. Thank you so much. It's nice and close. You can take as much or as little time as you want. And thank you for coming in and telling
us
about it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So to the audience, until next time, bye-bye.